You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Our possessions can have complicated lives of their own. They've been bought, collected, sold, even stolen, but can they shape and determine the destinies of their owners? In her latest book, The Life of Objects, Susanna Moore tells the story of Beatrice Palmer, a 17-year-old lacemaker from the Irish countryside who travels to Berlin to work for a wealthy family on the eve of World War II, a family that has lots of possessions, and what happens to her when the war breaks out. It's published by Knopf. I'm very pleased that it brings Susanna Moore to our show. Hello.
Hi.
This new novel is a far cry from the one that most people connect with you, your 1995 bestseller, In the Cut, not just in locale, but also in subject matter. And there's nothing erotic in this book.
Well, I think quite deliberately so. After In the Cut, I vowed never to write another sex scene as long as I lived. And although I've begun to think about doing it again. But for a long while, it was the last thing I wanted to do.
Did you feel that people had pigeonholed you?
Well, you know, people like to think that that novelists are their own subject. And I think people thought that the book was about me, so I had to spend a lot of time disavowing that idea. And it's not about me, you know.
Well, this one, nobody's going to wonder whether you're an Irish lacemaker. But there are certain similarities in that you came from Hawaii to the mainland when you were young. She goes from Ireland to Berlin, but at a time when Berlin already feels a bit dangerous.
There are similarities in that I, too, was this bookish girl. My mother died when I was a child, but I can't say that I had a childhood like Beatrice's. But I also lived and, in a way, created myself through reading, which created this tremendous hunger, if not greed, for the world. And it's not an accident that I left at 17 didn't go back for quite a long time. I knew that the things that I sought, most of which I had learned from reading, would not be found there, that I had to go to Berlin, so to speak.
But you want to make the point that your life was not as difficult as Beatrice's.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. But, you know, there are similarities, I would think, between this and In the Cut and other of my books, and that I am very interested in what it means to be female. You know, a mystery to me even now. Who is she? What does she want? She wants everything, by the way. And how does she manage the complexities that are her birthright? And, I mean, I'm using she as if I am not a female, but I'm not writing about myself in that sense, really.
And you also are able to use her to talk about what happened in Germany through a non-German perspective.
Yes, that was very important. That I knew that I could not presume to know, even as a writer, what it was like to be a Jew during the war or even a German. I knew that there would be a presumption in that I did not want to exercise. So the character had to be an outsider, and then I had to, as is true with writing, you know, solve that. Who was she?
Well, she's also not a Catholic. She's an Irish Protestant.
Yes, an Irish Protestant. She had to be an outsider. And she couldn't be French, obviously, because France fell in 1940. She couldn't be English because she'd have been deported. All Americans were deported or arrested after Pearl Harbor. But the Irish had declared themselves neutral, so she could be Irish.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned that you wouldn't presume to right as a Jew in Germany, but this family that she joins, the Metzenbergs, they're not a Jewish family, although there is one ancestor who's
yes.
Jewish.
And in truth, I suppose by the strict laws of the Reich, Dorothea, even though she has a certificate of Christianity that was granted to her grandfather, is Jewish. And there's
because they counted what they said was blood as
right.
the determining factor.
Yes, and if they had chosen to persecute the Metzenbergs because of Dorothea's ancestry. They certainly could have. And there's a Jewish tutor, and there are other people in the novel who are in danger and in fact, are killed.
But these are people who could, in theory, have left, and they had enough money to do it.
Yes, certainly could have left.
She is in awe of their wealth and sophistication. So she sees this to some degree as a learning experience for her?
Yes, and of course, you know, in the just the mechanics of a novel, you have to move from one point to sometimes the opposite point. So by the end of the book, of course, they are impoverished and have used all of their treasure that was once the center of their lives to help others and to survive themselves. So these objects that are of such value assume another kind of value other than aesthetic. Quite literally, it's about life over death.
Although it is hard for them to give them up.
Very hard.
It's like when you ask people if your house was on fire, what would you save? And some people say I'd save the cat. I'm not talking about children, but some would save the painting or the silverware or whatever it is that they value the most. And this is a family that has a lot of those kinds of possessions.
Yes. And, you know, I teach writing, and one of the things I try to teach my students is that metaphors can't be forced. And often when you come across a metaphor in a novel, I would wager that it was not composed self-consciously by the writer, that the writer only realized it later. And I was doing an interview in Los Angeles, and the gentleman said to me, "Oh, I love the metaphor that the buried treasure is the culture and the history and the humanism that had to be buried, that was buried and was lost during the war." And I had to admit that I had not consciously constructed it that way, but it's a good idea.
Well, there are two sides to every reading experience. There's what the writer put down and what we get out of it. And I've often spoken to writers who said, you know, I didn't even realize that there was this subplot in my book or a theme until I went on the book tour.
And also often if the writer does realize it, it shows the self-consciousness and its force.
They make too much of a point of it.
It's not to romanticize it. Or
are there memoirs that you could read to show you what life was like for people like the Metzenbergs or Beatrice?
Well, that's really how the idea of the book came to me, because I was at Berlin at the American Academy as a fellow, and I was reading all of the memoirs and journals and some histories that I could find about the war. And as I did with my Indian book, which is also based on memoir, I'm very interested in what's not said. I mean, in daily life, I'm interested in what's not said. But when you read memoirs and journals, and if you allow yourself to imagine, there's a lot that is being left out, even though purportedly, say, in a diary, the opposite is the intention of the writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have this family. Felix Metzenberg is a former German diplomat and a collector. But he refuses a new post under the Nazi regime and suffers the consequences. They didn't just let people alone just if you decided you didn't want to work for the government?
It was very random and very arbitrary, although unfortunately not random enough because so many people suffered. But, you know, the Hitler and certainly Goering had fantasies of themselves as art collectors. Hitler intended to open a museum in Linz, and all of the paintings that were confiscated and stolen were to end up there. And I say in the novel, too, that when Paris fell, Goering spent days in the museum, choosing what he wanted for himself. So part of the reason they confiscate Felix's house and coerce him is that they want his things. They want his treasure.
And then later the Russians came in and they took an awful lot of stuff back to the Soviet Union. This novel blends the conventions of a classic fairy tale like Cinderella with this more modern historical fiction approach. Why did you use that strategy?
Like Beatrice, I read a lot of fairy tales and myth and legend as a girl, and it provoked me to fantasy and to the idea, not altogether valid, that there was something out there that would transform me and something magical. And so there was that aspect. But also, again, if the book is going to soon be about war, it can't start with too much desolation. It has to start with, Beatrice has to move from someone who is imagining the romance of this world to the reality of this world.
Is that
with or without war, by the way?
Is that why she chooses to stay despite all the dangers? Because she could go back to Ireland.
She could go back. She chooses to stay because it's her first experience, really, of a family. And because she falls in love a little bit with Felix, a little bit with Herr Elias, even with Dorothea. And the alternative to her in her naivete and her innocence is worse, her dreary village in County Mayo. She's mistaken, of course.
Now, Felix has a different relationship to his collection than the rest of the members of his family. To some degree, they define him.
Yes, and they define him, and he is a collector, which is a very specific compulsive thing, if you know collectors. They just really, not only is it about aesthetics, but they just can't help themselves. He's in love with these objects.
Now, you have a number of historical figures in this book, like Hilde Monte, the World War II propagandist. Is Felix based on any real person?
The book is mainly inspired by a memoir that I read about a family called the Horstmanns. And I took a lot of details from that.
The book ends rather sadly as the war ends. The Russians arrive and things go from bad to worse for Beatrice and the Metzenbergs. I don't want to reveal too much. But you as a writer could have put them in the American zone rather than the Russian zone.
I was interested, characters reveal themselves very much in moments of crisis, just as people do in real life. And I wanted it not just to be about the horrors that the Reich perpetrated, but that this is an ongoing crisis in a way for all of us, whether it's, the deliberate demonization of Muslims or the enduring enslavement of women and children. It's not just war.
Well, people like the Metzenbergs would first be deemed enemies of the state by the Nazis just simply because they opposed, and then enemies of the state by the Soviets because they were wealthy.
And German.
So it wouldn't have mattered to the Russians that the Metzenbergs had opposed Hitler.
No, not at all. No. They were capitalists.
You do include things like conflicting news reports about D-Day. People had to choose what to believe, what not to believe.
Well, there were no newspapers. The telephones didn't work. There were endless rumors. There were not sources of information, even in the limited sense that existed during that time. Beatrice says somewhere that the closer you were to the front, the more inaccurate were the rumors. So this was helpful to me in the writing of it, because one of the problems was to keep the writing from becoming didactic. Since so much is known about the war, and I can assume that the reader knows about D-Day or the collapse of the German Soviet Pact or the fall of France or Pearl Harbor, the problem became how do I reveal this information without succumbing to what I call that bad school of writing, Napoleon, Emperor of the French,
But also you have to introduce the final solution to people.
Yes, all of that.
Aware or unaware of it.
Yes, yes. And the fact that Beatrice is an outsider helped me because she knows nothing. But still the dilemma was how to enfold and incorporate this information, which is essential, without its becoming overwritten or, as I said, didactic.
You're the author of 9 books, by my count. The novels, The Big Girls, One Last Look, In the Cut, Sleeping Beauties, The Whiteness of Bones, and My Old Sweetheart, and then 2 books of nonfiction, Light Years, A Girlhood in Hawaii, and I myself have seen it, The Myth of Hawaii. Now, this book, The Life of Objects, you also have taught at some of our major universities, most recently at Princeton, right?
Yes.
And also the Brooklyn Federal Detention Center and the Board of Education's GED program. Do you get something special out of those experiences?
Yes, I've been teaching too, not this year, but last year at the Mercer County Prison for Men. Yes, I get an enormous, a great deal out of that.
And aren't the students better in prison than they are at Princeton?
they're a little more complicated, and they're older, of course, although not much. I have a lot of young men, and they're very inspiring. I do like that work very much.
Susanna Moore's latest novel is The Life of Objects. It is published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you.